welcome to Motopod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 530 for Wednesday, the 21st of June, 2017. My name is Harry Lloyd, and alongside me is Skylar Vicroy. I'm very sorry, everybody. We have been away for a very, very long time, and that is largely down to me. My schedule has prevented me from, unfortunately, doing Motopod, so I do hold up my hands and accept all the angry tweets and emails and anything like that that people may have. But we are back. We have, I think it's now four big international races plus the TT to catch up on. So it could be a bit of a bumper episode, but I am excited to be back. We've had some absolutely thrilling motorcycle races to talk about. And yeah, it's going to be a good show, hopefully.
Yeah, I don't think you deserve to take all the blame there, Harry. I've definitely had some problems here at my end getting things going and getting things set up, so it's fair enough to say blame goes all around. But like you said, we are ready to get back at it, and in true Motopod tradition, we'll go ahead and get back properly. All right, and got ourselves a little Lagunitas today.
Nice. And in a slightly a newer Motopod tradition, I have just cracked a can of the Lewis Hamilton Monster Energy drink, which I have not yet had before. So we will now do the patented Harry Lloyd energy drink taste test to kick off this Motopod. For anybody who hasn't seen the Lewis Hamilton Monster drink, I'm now going to try and visually describe it over radio, which is not a great idea. But it's a very snazzy can. It's a black and red, so it's probably the most visually appealing can of Monster I've ever seen. It's a sort of a bright red colour, which fills me with fear. And now we're gonna drink it, and hopefully I don't have a heart attack, because this is about the 14th energy drink I've had in 3 days.
Oh yeah, no, it's no heart attack now. It's the one when you're 52 and not expecting it. That's when those will come in.
It's sort of like a bit of a raspberry taste, I guess. Does it say what it tastes like on the side? Carbonated energy drink. High caffeine content. I don't know. It tastes okay. When you're a three-time F1 world champion, Lewis Hamilton, life moves at 15,000 RPM and 200 miles an hour. A man who exists in a world of milliseconds demands a drink that can keep up. When we partnered with Lewis to create 44, our R&D team worked flat out to engineer the quickest Monster ever. Light, crisp, and refreshing, with a fast finish, it gets you out front and pulling away. Well, I'm not sure that any of that has actually happened, but it's an okay energy drink. I'd say that in terms of a flavor, the Rossi one is probably still edging it a bit, but I've definitely put worse things inside my body. So now that we've gotten those fun parts,
putting it.
Yeah, now that we've gotten those fun parts out of the way, a huge thank you to everybody who has donated and subscribed for Motopod. There's too many people to thank, mostly again due to my my poor sort of admin skills and keeping track of everything. But you know, it is hugely appreciated, and you know, obviously, you know, we do feel bad that, you know, people are donating and we're, you know, slowing down the shows, so we are trying to get it back on track. But as Skylar said, you know, it can be a bit tricky at times to get it all, but hopefully this episode does make up for it. So a huge thank you once again to everybody for that. And to actually celebrate Motopod's return, we have a bit of a competition for everybody. So thank you to the people at Bloomsbury Books publication. They have sent me a copy of Barry Sheen, the official photographic celebration of the legendary motorcycle champion. So now, again, I'm going to describe a visual product over radio. So essentially, it's written by Rick Broadbent, who, as longtime fans of Motopod will know, is probably our collective favourite motorcycle racing author. He did Ring of Fire. He did that near-death thing about the TT. He's recently done Freddie Spencer's autobiography. So the words in it are very, very good. And it's sort of a coffee table book. So I'm not sure if that's an American thing or if that's just an Australian thing. So it's basically a big book with lots of pictures, also lots of words, but an emphasis on the pictures that you might leave on the coffee table for when guests come round and if you want to strike up conversation. I've had a read through it. It's very good. You know, it has lots of classic photos of Barry. Also has, you know, some quite gruesome photos, like, you know, Barry's bones. With all of the metalwork in them, of course, after the Daytona crash and the Silverstone crash and things like that. A couple of photos of Barry's bum for the ladies as well. So, you know, a nice mix of all those sort of things. And yeah, you know, even if I hadn't got it for free, it's probably the sort of thing that that I would buy. So as we said, thanks to the people at Bloomsbury, they're giving a Motopod fan the chance to win their own copy of the Barry Sheen book. So all you have to do to enter is write into Motopod at motopodcast.com. And in the title of your email, just put Sheen in all caps so that I can easily find it. And basically, all we want to know is who was your first racing hero and why. And then a winner will be randomly selected. Maybe we'll even do a couple of winners. And then, yeah, you'll get a copy of this book sent to you. And even if you don't win, I would really recommend getting it. As I said, it's like a really nice book just to have out, as I'm sure fans will know and not be really surprised. I have several MotoGP books. And in terms of, you know, physical construction and just overall quality, this is, you know, definitely the nicest book, that I've seen, in terms of MotoGP stuff. As I said, really great, you know, print quality, really nice photos, and something to definitely have on the coffee table for when guests come over. And if you're a bit like me and don't really know anything other than motorcycles, it'll hopefully get a conversation started. So you're not sat there for 4 hours with dinner guests with nothing to talk about, because the only thing you do in life is watch motorcycle racing and drink energy drinks. So yeah, as we said, write into motopod at motopodcast.com, have Sheen in all caps in the title, and then just tell us about your first racing hero, and we'll pick a couple of names out of the hat, and then our friends over at Bloomsbury will send you the book. So yeah, hope to read everybody's racing heroes, and then, you know, we'll also read them out on the show as well. Unfortunately, it's not open to current or past Motopod hosts.
Sorry to
disappoint you there, Skylar, but yeah, hopefully that makes up for the month of being away. And yeah, as I said, it's a really nice book, so, you know, be sure to go check it out. And now we can get into the meat of the show. As we said, we've been away for a month. I checked when we posted the last episode, it has been a month, and a lot has happened since then. As we said, the Isle of Man TT, and also two World Superbike and two MotoGP races. So first of all, just some sort of general industry news. Unfortunately, Max Biaggi during the Catalan Grand Prix had quite a nasty supermoto accident and has broken upwards of 9 ribs. It was, you know, initially, obviously, with recent events, you know, Nicky Hayden, then Rossi's motocross crash as well, everybody was, you know, quite scared and understandably quite worried when Max Biaggi was airlifted to hospital in Rome. But the Roman Emperor will be all okay in the long run. Nothing life-threatening. Obviously, breaking 9 ribs is pretty painful. I didn't even know you had 9 ribs, but, you know, you learn something new every day. So Biaggi will be okay. He's still in hospital. You know, a bit of damage to his lung, but as we said, luckily nothing life-threatening. And you know, as we'll get to a bit in the Misano World Superbike race, you know, this sort of showed how, you know, how much of a community the motorcycle racing world is. You know, Rossi found out about Biaggi just before his press debrief at the Catalan Grand Prix. And the first question Rossi asked any of the journalists was, you know, how's Max? And obviously those two never really saw eye to eye. So, you know, time does heal all wounds, and deep down, everybody does have a lot of respect for each other. So that was really great to see, and great to hear that Max is going to make a full recovery.
Yeah, that was a bit of a scary one. And like you said, within recent events, all that stuff coming on, it was definitely one to be watching for. So glad that he's going to be all right, and hopefully back at a track soon. But following in the news, EBR, the motorcycle factory, is going to beginning its liquidation, which at the time was going to begin. It actually has begun since it started on June 7th. Like we said, we've been gone for a little while. And it's a bit of a shame because EBR, if I remember correctly, had started his partnership originally with Harley, then kind of broke off from Harley when that relationship soured, started doing things on their own. And they never could quite get a foothold, especially here in the American market. You know, they're a very innovative company, but at the same time, they just some things need to be left alone, like front brakes. But anyway, but unfortunately, they'll be liquidating, so they will be no more. But that hopefully doesn't kill the dream of people who want to start, you know, another motorcycle factory, because more competition is better, and there's always new designs. Jonas Folger is going to remain on the Monster Yamaha Tech 3 team for the 2018 MotoGP World Championship. It'll be a one-year deal once again, which will put him in line with pretty much everybody else on the grid. It's 2019, so we should get quite the silly season next year. But this was anticipated, as he has been only overshadowed by his teammate in having a great rookie campaign. Svolgaard has been right there, and he also amazingly has not crashed a whole lot. But you know, I'm starting to think this year might have a theme of surprises and redemption. I'm telling you, it's turned out to be one. But
it's been a really good year. You know, as we'll get to with both the Grand Prix, it's been a pretty unpredictable year. And I read a stat today that I think Maverick Vinales, he leads the championship with the least points of any rider since like 1993 or something, which shows, you know, how close the championship is, which I think is pretty cool. And then in more news, it looks like Jake Gagne, at least for the Laguna Seca round, will ride the Red Bull Honda in the place of Nicky Hayden. At least that's what's being reported by motorsport.com. You know, nothing official has been released by anybody yet, but Jake Gagne was, you know, one of a couple of names being thrown in the ring there to replace Nicky on that Red Bull Honda. You know, I think it'd be great to see a young American get a chance on the world stage. You know, I definitely think that's the sort of thing that Nicky would have wanted. Gagne's obviously been racing the Honda in Moto America, so you know, he have a bit of understanding of the bike. But it's going to be a big learning experience for him, and hopefully he can show some flashes, because as we'll get to with the TT, the Honda's maybe not in the best place to be raced at the second.
No, it's a win for everybody there. Jake gets to go up, Red Bull gets to put an American rider on the bike at the American track, and you know, that's kind of a win-win. But it kind of throws back to when GP first came here. There was a lot of America, Roger Lee got to hop on the bike a few times, and you know, you got these guys that are sitting around. I remember Chaz Davey even hopped on one when he was still over at the Pramac team. But it'll be good to see him on the bike. I'm not sure if he's pulling double duty. I doubt that he will. He'll probably just be running Superbike, and maybe somebody else fills for him on the Honda. I'm not sure how their whole situation works out, but that should be quite interesting.
Yeah, for sure it should. And so then, sort of the other big event that we've had, of course, was the Isle of Man TT. That whole weekend, or that whole fortnight, sorry, was hit pretty hard by weather. They had to cancel a lot of practice, and also cancel one of the Supersport races. Guy Martin didn't end up racing in the big bike races because he had a quite big and scary crash. When he hit a false neutral on that Honda, which obviously marked the end to a pretty disastrous roads campaign for the Honda team. In the two big internationals, i.e. the Northwest and the Isle of Man TT, the Honda CBR 1000 didn't turn a single racing lap, which is not the best debut for a new motorcycle. And, you know, it's on YouTube and stuff like that. The interview that Guy Martin did with ITV after the crash, you know, Guy Martin has obviously had some pretty big crashes, of course, that famous Fireball crash. But you could really see that Guy Martin was really shaken up by that crash. You know, he said he was waiting for the big stop when he came off that bike. Probably for the best that he didn't race in the senior on that bike. Honda really struggling this year in all sorts of things. You know, obviously, World Superbike's not going the best. BSB, they've had one podium, which is okay. Moto America, they're not really anywhere close. Obviously, roads, they've had a disaster. F1 is, you know, pretty disastrous. MotoGP, they're not quite there, it seems. So, tricky time for Honda.
Yeah, which is a bit of a surprise, you know, in engineering leader, and they're falling out everywhere. Even in the Indy 500, they disappointed everybody when Alonso's motor blew up when he was running another Honda. And then they haven't really been anywhere this year. I think the BSB, they've had some strong showing, but they tend to have a good showing over there. But that might be, you know, attributed to the talent level that's risen up to those ranks. But yeah, I don't understand what's going on there. If they need a shift in management, or they recently had one, or if it's just, you know, you can only be on top for so long before everybody guns up on you. And maybe it's just gotten to that perfect apex where they were on top and everything for so long. Now everyone else has gone past them. It's them against the world, right? So I don't see them being out down too much longer, but they really do. If they want to compete with that World Superbike effort, which blends into any racing, they use that platform on real roads or the Suzuka or anything like that. They really need to put some kind of update out there. They need to step away from the current platform.
Yeah, and I think the biggest thing is that, you know, for Moto America, for BSB, and especially for World Superbikes, is that HRC have no involvement in any of those projects. The only project that HRC will have direct input in with that Fireblade is Suzuka.
And that's true.
And I think they really need to do well at Suzuka. Obviously, with the old Fireblade, they had back-to-back technical DNFs, stuck throttle for Stoner, and then I can't remember what the exact problem was when Nikki was on it. But they need to do something with that bike now, not just because they've had two DNFs, but also just because of the whole, bad PR, essentially, that's building around the new Fireblade. So hopefully Suzuka does offer a bit of hope for them. Speaking of hope, Peter Hickman emerges, the great new hope for road racing, as Hickman podiumed in every single race that he entered at the TT. Peter Hickman is a man over 6 foot and still got on the podium in the lightweight TT, which is hugely impressive. He was challenging Hutchie for the win in the senior before Hutchie unfortunately crashed. Hutchie has broken his femur, which is not good, and he's broken his femur on his bad leg as well.
I was going to ask which leg it was, and I was hoping it wasn't going to be that one.
Yep, I think he's already had 3 surgeries on it. Obviously nothing life-threatening with Hutchie, which is the most important thing, but hopefully he can be back up there. But yeah, Peter Hickman really emerged as, the star of the TT. Michael Dunlop took the senior victory on the new Suzuki. He was very fast in, the super stock and the other superbike race, but some technical issues got in the way there. So, road racing is looking pretty healthy there. Unfortunately, we did have 3 riders, Joachim van der Hoek, Alan Bonnet, and Davey Lampert. Unfortunately, they lost their lives at the TT. So, Motorpod extends our wishes and thoughts to all their families. But otherwise, it was a pretty exciting TT, and as always, you can see all of the highlight shows for that on ITV. I think that's still up on their player if you're in the UK, and if you're in the US or somewhere else, you can probably download a VPN and you can figure it out from there. It's not too hard, and those highlight shows are really, really good. So if you haven't watched the TT or are a bit curious about what happened, then do go watch those, because the TT is only broadcast live via radio. Obviously, with a circuit like that, doing live TV would be quite the undertaking. So it's just the highlight shows for now. But, another good TT overall, and a great to see some young talent up and coming. Obviously, unfortunately, McGuinness wasn't there, not there racing. And good to see that Michael Dunlop has now won. I think it's on 4 different bikes, which is pretty impressive for him as well. And then obviously with the TT, that caused an extended break in the BSB calendar. And we came back to the wholly unsurprising news that Davide Giuliano has decided to part company with Tyco BMW. And Davide Giuliano on Saturday was in Misano looking for a ride in World Superbikes. So his venture into BSB, not really fruitful.
No, which is a shame, because, here was a guy that a few years ago when he was on the factory Ducati, when Spies was there, was within a shout of the championship along with Haga and everything else, but famously crashed with Haga, pretty much ruined his World Superbike career because Ducati pretty much gave him the boot after that. But I mean, the guy's got loads of talent, but he definitely needs to get on a bike that he can ride well and he can ride fast. But I mean, that's like the most general fucking statement ever I just made there, as I was trying to think of something to make. He needs to get on a bike that he can ride well and ride fast.
Davide Giuliano is one of those guys who, always showed flashes of speed but could never convert that flash to a full fire. Like, he'd always do well in Super Bowl. He'd always have 1 or 2 races. But, then when it came time to, say, battle for victory, he'd always bottle it. He'd always crash. Fitness is a bit of an issue for him with sort of a recurring back injury. And I think, unfortunately, just overall fitness is probably a bit of an issue. But yeah, I think he would be good to see back in World Superbikes. As you said, he's definitely talented enough. It's just that there's not really any good World Superbike seats going for this year, so maybe he does something like a second bike at a team like Barney or something like that, but I don't know. Definitely if somebody's injured, then you'd have to say that Davide Giuliano will probably be one of the big replacements.
Ah, for sure. Speaking of back at World Superbike, Ben Spies dropped in this last weekend into the booth with our very own Harry Lloyd, and there may have been a slight technical difficulty, but
apologies for the technical difficulties. The microphone was plugged in and was on, but there were some other issues, and it's a real shame because Spies is actually sharing some great insights. So sorry about that one. Sometimes these things happen.
Yeah, but you know, he was back and it was good to see him and, you know, hear back in the voice and you know, who knows what. Maybe he was, I think he might have been down there trying to get a little air time to see if he's cut for the air, maybe get a little deal somewhere, be a little pit lane reporter there, Harry.
I would certainly accept Ben Spies as my pit lane reporter, but yeah, definitely a couple of whispers going around the World Superbike paddock about what Spies was doing there. He was in the area for a friend's wedding. But yeah, Ben Spies definitely coming up on a few people's radars. So, you know, be sure to check all the usual news sites because it does seem like Ben's getting slightly itchy feet having been away from racing for so long. If you check Ben's Instagram, he's definitely doing a lot of off-road riding and things like that. So, you know, I think his shoulder's also getting a lot better. So, who knows what could happen in the future with elbows.
Right, and somebody that should be on your radar is Juan Mir. Now, he is our current Moto3 Championship leader and has now signed a 3-year deal with Mark VDS, which came out, oddly, it seemed like halfway through the race in Barcelona. They mentioned that news, that he had put ink to the paper and everything was good to go.
Yeah, it was really weird, the timing of that. I think that Leopard probably didn't want to, you know, minimal coverage on it, so there's probably a bit of negotiating about the time of that announcement. But yeah, it's not the first time that we've seen Mark VDS put out something at a weird time. I remember Dave and I were recording Motopod once and Tito Rabat, like signing again for Moto 2, broke at midnight or something, which was a bit strange.
Which is, what I was going to, you actually brought me full circle to my point was, I think at this point, if he's going to Mark VDS in Moto 2, that we pretty much would have to figure, Jack Miller's going to stay on and that Tito Rabat is probably going to find his self somewhere else, and then at this point I was going to say Morbidelli is a shoe-in to grab that seat, but with the way things are going, it might be whoever wins the championship this year moves up, because this guy Alex Marquez that we talked about a couple years ago who looked lost in the woods has come out and taken the gloves off this year and made you ask Morbidelli who at this last race. But yeah, I gotta tell you, fully impressed, fully on par with Alex Marquez. This is someone, if you want to see somebody put in the work and have someone stick with you because they believe in you, that is the story right there.
Yeah, no, for sure. So yeah, you know, Mir has proved, you know, in his last season and a half in the World Championship that he's, you know, definitely the one to watch, definitely delivering on all that potential we saw in the Sev. So yeah, definitely, you know, be interesting to see how Mir does progress. 3 years with Mark VDS, you know, maybe it's 1 year in Moto2, 2 years in GP, who knows? But as you rightly said, Skylar, it does seem like Tito Rabat is talking to teams like Aspar, like Avinter and MotoGP, and then also having a couple of sniffs in the World Superbike paddock. You know, the World Superbike paddock could definitely benefit from a couple of fast Spaniards, you know, being a primarily British-dominated championship. And speaking of World Superbikes, Ducati brought a bit of aero to the last round of World Superbikes in Misano. They debuted a lenticular wheel cover, which is basically just a bit of carbon fiber over the rear wheel. Which they had tested with Michele Pirro last year in MotoGP, for fans who may remember that one. They says it gives a bit of an advantage, you know, just helping the airflow to not go through the spokes, essentially. But it's a tricky thing because they can't use it when there's a lot of wind, because if there's a crosswind, you know, it's essentially like hitting a wall. The wind,
a bit of a sail.
Yeah, so it really unsettles the rear. When Chaz Davies put it on, he did his fast slap in qualifying. That was obviously also with a qualifying tyre. So it's a bit hard to tell what effect it actually has. But nice to see Ducati, you know, still experimenting with stuff. And even in World Superbikes where, you know, the regulations are a lot more tight. And yeah, you know, I saw a couple of people complaining about it, but I reckon it's pretty cool.
Were those couple of people, HRC, is that who was complaining about it?
No, I don't think HRC know that World Superbikes exists.
Oh, right. This is where Ducati's actually allowed to do something innovative. Gotcha.
Yeah.
So, Pikes Peak Hill Climb is going to be starting June 25th, and for the first time ever, it's going to be available to watch live. They're actually building the infrastructure right now, running cables up the mountain, building camera stands, 22 cameras to catch the racing live, and you will be able to watch it for free. You just got to go to live.matchsports.com/PPIAC. Go to the roadracingworld.com article, and that's where I got this information. You'll be able to find the link there instead of me reading out this horrible link they have. But that's pretty awesome that that race has now garnered enough attention to be on TV. And I know the race isn't what it used to be because they have, I think, paved it all, maybe all the way up to the top now because of the erosion and things like that. So you won't get the half tarmac, half gravel rally style that you used to, but that shouldn't discourage you from watching it because it is knucking futs watching some of the cars they bring out for that go up that hill at the rate they do, knowing those guys are... Now, when you say the Isle of Man is on the edge of sheer death if they go off the side of a hill, these boys will put that to a laughing matter. It is absolutely insane. And you get some big names out there from the motorcycle community, like Chris Fillmore, who used to race the KTMs here in the Moto America series. He'll be out there on KTMs. I think they have a factory effort, if I believe correctly. So this may be America's last insane race, kind of like the TT, where we're going to throw a bunch of guys on a mountain and see how fast they can go up in their triple supercharger or turboed diesel semi-truck. But you never know what comes up. But yeah, it should be cool to see. So make sure you check that out.
Yeah, nice. Hopefully, hopefully it is all good for Pikes Peak. It's, you know, always one of those ones that I've, you know, sort of wanted to watch, but you know, as you said, never really had a way to watch it. So maybe if I haven't overdosed on motorcycles, I'll give it a watch later in the year. And speaking of overdosing on motorcycles, we're now gonna jump into talking about all the different races we had.
Before we do that, do we want to make our announcement about future hosts?
Yeah, sure. You can can lead that one.
So, as we talked about earlier in the show, Harry's a very busy man living his MotoGP World Superbike celebrity life. And I'm not able to take on the load when, you know, that everybody left. I thought I would be able to at first, but it's come to my attention that I'm not quite able to. So, we are looking for help. If you are interested in participating in the podcast, whether as little or as much as you like, maybe you want to specialize in BSB or Moto America or MotoGP or World Superbike, and you can hop on and talk motorcycles from time to time, drop us an email. Let us know. We can get you kind of run through the setup if you want to try it out. If you want to be a part-time or full-time host. And, you know, like I said, there's always benefits to maybe, you know, checking out a race here and there, yeah, dropping a name or two, getting in. So, yeah, just let us know because we could sure use some help. And maybe this would be your chance to hop in and not only watch, you know, participate in the show, but be on the show. So, yeah, I just want to throw that out there if anybody's interested. The show is always going to continue to go on, but a little bit of help would be appreciated.
Yeah, for sure. So, yeah, you know, send us your CV, but just send us, you know, your thoughts on racing or anything like that. So hopefully we'll have a pretty busy inbox with that, and also with the competition. But yeah, now we can get into racing. So if you think you could be joining in these conversations in the future, then motopod@motopodcast.com. So we'll probably talk about the two Moto 3 races, talk about the two Moto 2 races, and talk about the two Moto GP races. Talking about the Moto 3 race in Mugello is pretty simple. It was basically batshit insane until the last two laps. I mean, I don't think there's any point talking about anything before the last two laps. Because
one thing I wanted to point out was that I think Bulega's time is done in Moto 3. He's too big. He just drops like a stone. He gives up 12 positions right off the line because he just can't get that momentum going on that little bike.
Yeah, no, he does look really, really big on that one, and he has really struggled a lot this year, a lot more than I thought he'd struggle. So, luckily that VR46 Academy now does have the Moto 2 team in place. So, you know, there's some rumors about Pecco already moving up to MotoGP maybe, and Stefano Manzi isn't really setting the world on fire. So hopefully they do keep hold of Bulega, because I think Bulega is a talented rider. Does deserve a shot on a bike that would suit him. But other than that, that first part of the race, as we said, apart from the final two laps, was just absolutely insane. We had eight abreast into turn one, all sorts. You know, the lead group was like 20 riders or something. There was, you know, just nothing to choose from between any of them. It was one of the most exciting Moto3 races we've ever had, I think.
Yeah, it was six laps to go. There was 22 riders within 1.6 seconds from leader to the end. That sounds like the first lap, not the with six to go. That's just insane.
Yeah, no, it was, and you know, there's some pretty hard moves. You know, a couple of riders were risking it pretty hard. Darren Binder, always a bit of a hard charger, but it really came down to the strategy in the final couple of laps. And somewhat surprisingly, actually, Andrea Migno played it to perfection. You know, I've never really rated Andrea Migno that much, but in Mugello, you know, he proved he can be a great tactician, and he managed to open up just enough of a gap to let him and Fabio De Gianantonio escape. And then it was, you know, pretty much just between them for the podium battle.
Yeah, and then he won from the front, which is a weird thing because, you know, Mugello, it's a big draft track because the finish line is all the way by the halfway point. And everyone thought that the worst place you could be coming out of the final lap was in first. And he just had, like, the last three corners were just fantastic how he put that together. Took me a minute to figure out how he was able to do that, especially with DG Antonio was right there. And he just had enough to pull it off. And then if you ever wonder if Rossi is rooting for his guys, just wait till the end of that race when he pulls in. I don't think I've ever seen that much emotion out of Rossi.
Yeah, no, he was definitely pumped from, of course, Andrea Migno's first ever world championship win ahead of Gianantonio. Juan Fuengirola, a bit of a surprise up there on the podium. So yeah, you know, nice mix of riders, and obviously it does become a bit of a lottery in that last lap, especially, you know, for that group behind them. But you know, it was really exciting Moto3 stuff, but I don't think we can really take, you know, too much, oh, you know, this guy clearly has the edge over this guy from it, just because it was so mental and, you know, absolutely slipstream city. The Moto3 race in Barcelona, that did prove to be a bit more tactical, certainly. And what a race from Juan Mir. You know, he was in that front group again. We had a pretty big front group. You know, the top six at the line were within a second of each other, but Juan Mir played it to perfection and lined up a move with just a couple of corners to go. Of course, there was all the drama about the ever-changing chicane at Catalunya, but that didn't worry Juan Mir, and he put through a move on Jorge Martin with, you know, about three corners to go. And it was a big move. It was a big boy move, but he had his big boy pants on, and just incredible stuff. And that's why he has a 3-year contract with Mark VDS.
Yeah, it was such a big boy move. Even Romano Fanati, when he crossed the line, he was like reaching over to grab Juan Mir's arm to tell him like how awesome. Like he gave him like the thumbs up. Like, yeah, that was impressive. When someone who talks about big boy moves, Fanati is not afraid to make. And he even respected the move that Mir make. Absolutely clean, but just, ooh, you had to trust your front end to make that kind of move.
Yeah, no, really huge confidence with Juan Mir. You know, good to see Leopard Racing back up there with the Honda as well. Obviously, they struggled a bit with their switch to KTM last year, but now right up there. Romano Fanati, good to see him back up the front as well. Romano Fanati and Aaron Canet obviously had a bit of a funny time in qualifying. The whole slipstream situation continues to get worse and worse in Moto3. It's become, you know, pretty ridiculous. Right now, it's a 12-place grid penalty if you're caught going slow during any session throughout the weekend. But riders are still being, you know, parking lot attendants, basically.
Yeah, it's not even good in GP. I mean, you'll see guys go out there and just, you know, four or five bikes sitting on the outside of a corner. So, come on. Like, this top boys, go figure it out. But yeah. I mean, it's tough to say what they're going to do about it, because if everyone is doing it, are they going to penalize the entire field?
Yeah.
So, you know, you got five guys out there that can do it, and they're trying to, you know, the only way I think they can eliminate it is if they switch to the Super Pole format. Can you imagine trying to do Super Pole with 43 bikes in Moto3?
But, you know, you say that, and in World Supersport 300, we obviously do the two-stage Super Pole, and... Actually, no, my point's completely invalid, because they do the exact same fucking thing. Even when there's only 12 riders and, you know, it's a 5-kilometer-long track, they still all just go together. I don't know. Like, was it ever this bad in the 125 era? Like, I can't remember it ever being this bad in 125s.
You know, I couldn't tell you. Like, 125s, to me, was you know, when I was starting to really pay attention to 125, this of course was after several years of MotoGP, because I had been, you know, still trying to get myself into it as hard as I am now. But Marc Márquez was, you know, and Pol Espargaró were the guys that were tearing it up. And all I remember is them going fast, except Mark usually went fast sometimes even after the checkered flag had came out. But I don't know if it was ever this bad in 125. I don't remember it in 250, that's for sure. But I don't know. It's something that, you know, they're going to have to fix it, because it's very dangerous. And obviously it's starting to bring out the red mist in certain people. And even when the fast guys come around and the guys all hook on, all of a sudden they'll just, you know, throw up the sail, sit up and let off. And you've got five guys behind that are almost impacting them from behind, because they're, you know, trying to follow them dead to rights through the corner. And now that they've, you know, thumped, and it just makes all these guys spread across the track. And yeah, they're gonna have to find a way almost to make it where the penalty is so severe you wouldn't even want to risk it. But
yeah,
it's a tough call, right? Because if you've got teammates, and, you know, let's say the, you know, Red Bull IO wants their guys all together, and one guy pulls over to wait, and then speeds up when his guy comes, and you penalize him. And if the penalty is severe, like you're suspended for one race or something like that, which is crazy, how are you going to enforce that? And he's like, no, I was waiting for my teammate. And they're like, well, you should have left the pits. And it's like, well, you know, it took him a little bit to get the tire warmers off. It's not my fault. And then, I don't know.
I know in Mugello, there were a couple of penalties, but Race Direction had actually handed out even more penalties. And Race Direction spent, I think it was like 4 hours going through all of the footage and all of the data as every rider argued that they shouldn't be penalized. Like, Race Direction has actually had to hire more people to come to every races just to deal with Moto3 towing. So it's a pretty big thing. John McPhee, he didn't have the best couple of races. So, you know, he's lost a bit of momentum in the championship, and it really looks like now it's between Mir Fanardi and Jorge Martin for the championship. Marcos Ramirez continues to, you know, be a bright shining star. You know, pretty consistently the leading KTM, really far ahead of both Antonelli and Ben Schneider. You know, that Red Bull KTM team really, really struggling. Sky doing a bit better. But yeah, it's Ramirez who's really burning bright. And again, you know, proof that the Sev does produce great riders, and that you can tell what riders are the ones to watch by watching the Sev as well. Of course, you know, that's all free on YouTube to go watch. So if anybody's ever bored, I would recommend going to do that one. And after those two races, as we said, there's no big surprise in the Moto3 championship. Mir leads with 133 points. Fanardi's second with 88. So Juan Mir, now as we approach the second half of the season, can really go into, you know, okay, I'll settle for a top five. Okay, I'll settle for a podium. And, you know, go a bit more defensive and, you know, take the wins when they come. And it's really up to Mir, Canet, and DeGian Antonio. Those three riders within just 5 points of each other. They now really have to attack and hope that Mir encounters a bit of bad luck.
Right, you know, and the way he's going too, he's such a smart rider that he will be able to pull back. As long as he doesn't have a Kent, you know, a Danny Kent style meltdown, he should be just fine.
No, I don't think he will be. You know, in the Sev, when he was battling for the championship, he crashed way too much. And a lot of his crashes came early in the season, and you saw a switch in him towards the end of the year where he did settle down, but then unfortunately got taken out in a couple of races. And I think that Mir knows what he needs to do. And I think that Leopard team, despite the issues they had last year and despite Danny Kent being Danny Kent, I think that there are the personnel there in place to give Mir the support that he needs both on the track and off the track to fight for the championship.
Agreed. So now we're going to jump over to Moto2, and we're going to jump back to Mugello. And Mugello is a very special place, Harry. It's not just the Italian round and Rossi's home track. We can forget all that. It feels like it's when the season is, everyone's had a chance to, you know, get themselves warmed up. Teams are ready to go. The setups are in. The bikes are in. The heat is finally here. There's 100,000 people in the stands. It's always nice to see guys that maybe have had a few rough years make a nice comeback towards the front. You know, Pacini's been having a decent year. He had a crash here or there, but he's been relatively up there fighting for the podium for each race. And I got to say, you know, watching Pacini not only compete in this race, but to be able to get the end result that he did, it was fantastic. It was a fantastic race to watch.
Yeah, it was one of the best. It was actually a good Moto2 race, which is a pretty rare thing.
Right. And, you know, he wasn't the Italian you were expecting to be up there. For sure, you were kind of expecting it to be a bit of a Morbidelli show, but he had not been that great all weekend. And it seems like he's struggling a little bit with the heat.
Yeah, it does seem like at Hot Tracks he's struggling a little bit. They had a new front fairing on his bike with a much smaller air intake to try and help with aerodynamics. They also then used that at Catalunya. I'm not sure if that really had any effect. But yeah, come the race, Morbidelli just didn't have the pace to live with the front three. And it was, as you say, Pessini, Luti, and Alex Marquez who had an absolutely cracking race between them. Oliveira, he was back up there again. And he finished 5 seconds off the win and 2 seconds behind Morbidelli. And then there was a pretty good fight for sixth between Luca Marini, Dominic Agata, and Simone Corsi. And good to see Brad Binder come back from that arm injury and be straight away in the top 10 as well. You know, great to see the South African take the time to recover and then, you know, deliver on what he was doing, even with a broken arm in Argentina. Pretty disappointing race again from Yoni Hernandez in 17th. He was ahead of Fabio Quartararo, ahead of Sandro Cortese. Pecco, he had a crash, so it's a remount to finish down in 22nd. And we have Augusto Fernandez replacing Axel Bassani as well on the speed-up bike. And Fernandez was 25th on his Moto2 World Championship debut on a speed-up ahead of Pauwi and Fellini and McKenzie. So I think that's pretty good for Fernandez, in all honesty. And then we had a big crash between Baldassare and Nakagami at the start of the race, which was quite scary, but everybody was okay there. But yeah, Mugello, I think overall, Mugello was the best weekend of racing we've had so far this year.
For sure. No, that was a... you keep asking yourself at each race, how can the next one get better? And it seemed like they all lived up to a hype. Granted, they were different in each way, too. Versus Moto3, which is this axe murderer, who's going to make it to the end? It was a train, right? Moto2 saw the resurgence of Pessini. Here's a guy who's been threatening the podium, but runs off, but then pulls off the win finally in front of the home crowd after, I think it was since, would they say 9 years since his last win?
Yeah, I think something like that.
Something like 8 years, that's it. I have it written down. I should probably look at my notes. 8 years since his last win, and in 2009. So, and then, you know, unfortunately also, I just wanted to put a little side note that Bagnaia was up there on the top before he crashed out in the final lap. Whoops. But yeah, no, great, a fantastic race. And then, of course, we'll get to the GP later, but a fantastic weekend all in all.
Yeah, no, really, really, really great from Mugello. And what was surprising, actually, is that Matteo Pessini, you know, as you say, has had a fair few crashes. But he was right up there again in Barcelona. Unfortunately, Barcelona was a bit of a classic Moto2 race in that it was an absolute snooze fest. But lots of similar themes from Mugello. Again, we had Marquez, Pessini, and Luci on the podium. But most surprising, Morbidelli down in sixth place.
Yeah. He, and the thing is, too, he never, I mean, he's lucky to have the sixth place because he looked like he was going to fade back even further. I mean, he never really, he battled, I think, for the lead for about, what, three turns? And that was about it. Because he had a great start. And then, no, he didn't even battle for the lead. Marquez shot off like a bullet. He had a 1 second lead after one lap. And then I can't remember where Morbidelli had qualified from. But he got a 3-4 place, I think, on the start, but then slowly started slipping back. And then, but because of the battle that was going on behind him, they had enough of a gap where he was able to hold down in sixth place to the end.
Yeah, yeah, really, I don't know, Morbidelli, as you say, it's he really, really fading. And I don't know, as you said as well, Scarl, you know, maybe it's just that these two hot races, track conditions, very, very warm here. You know, maybe that's his weakness, are the hot conditions. But pendulum in terms of momentum definitely swung back in Alex Marquez's favor.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, a lot of question marks, and also watch out for Tom Luthi as well in the championship.
Right.
You know, Luthi every year comes strong at the end, and he's had a pretty strong start to the year, and he's always a bit of a danger man.
No, and he's been there forever. I mean, this is a guy who's got a ton of experience, so you're not going to shake him at the end. And he's one of those, he's much like a Johann Zarco. He's calm and collected. He's a thinker. Not a whole lot of emotion one way or the other, you know, but this is a guy that has, how long has he been in Moto2? I think this is just about the inception. It seems like he's been around since about 2009.
Yeah, no, he has. He's been there every year since it started. He missed a couple of races through injury, but otherwise, yeah, he's the most experienced man in Moto2. You know, I can't really see him ever moving up to MotoGP, but maybe he becomes a career Moto2 man.
Right, much like he'll be the Keenan Sefaglu of Moto2.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, in terms of anything else that happened at the Barcelona circuit from the results, nothing really too surprising again. Yoni Hernandez once more outside the points. Fabio Quartararo, he's inside the top 10, just behind Jorge Navarro. Navarro actually coming really strong in the last couple of races after a test. Pecco was down in 14th, so, you know, blowing a bit hot and cold as a rookie as well. Oliveira back inside the top five on that KTM for the first year of being on that bike. Really, really impressive. I guess the other big Moto2 news we're missing is that Triumph officially announced that there'll be the engine supply from 2019.
Oh, yeah, I forgot all about that.
But that news leaked so long ago that, that you know, even Triumph made a joke about it in the press conference.
Yeah, and the thing is, though, they are going to be running, I think, it's going to be a bigger CC. What did they say? It's not a 750. It's,
Yeah, is it a 750?
It might be a 750. I think it is a 750. And from what people were saying, it sounds fantastic, too. It's going to be a proper, you know, screaming banshee going down the track. But it should be interesting because it's going to add more power, they're saying, to the series. So for all those people that were, you know, talking bad on Moto 2, especially in the early years where they were saying the World Superbikes had more power and, they're running around with the stock 600. Well, now you get more power and custom frames. So,
yeah, and they're also bringing in more electronic aids as well. So Magneti Marelli will supply a spec ECU.
Yep.
I
heard because of their change in the engine that definitely the frame manufacturers, a few of them might be coming back. So we're going to see a bit of a spread in the frames again because they're thinking new engine, new power, new design. Everyone's starting from ground zero again. I know a few of the current frame manufacturers like Kalex and Suda were a little upset with the news being slow to get out and being confirmed, which this change I think doesn't happen until 2019, but just goes to show you how far ahead these guys have to think and plan something out that they're, you know, 2 years away and that's not soon enough. So should be interesting to see in 2019. I doubt we will see a step back to what it was in 2009 where it's just, you know, whoever shows up with, you know, the trickiest setup for the weekend wins and you get this, you know, 40 riders, you know, battling out. It'll still be a precision because these guys do have experience building the frames. It's a slight tweak. It's not a major overhaul like it was when they went to four strokes, but it should be a nice change to see, and we'll see if Triumph can have the same record as Honda's for holding motors together, because don't let that pass you up. That as much racing as Moto2 has done on these engines, you have seen very few engine failures.
Yeah, I think it's something, it's literally only one or two engine failures that Honda have had. Otherwise, you know, there have been a couple of gearbox problems and things like that, but in terms of actual engine failures in, you know, however many hundred of Moto2 races we've had, there's been two. Which is, you know, pretty much unprecedented. I mean, I think Aprilia have two engine issues a weekend in MotoGP at the moment.
That's just in the race.
Yeah, exactly.
Sam Lowe's never makes all the way around, but hey!
So anyway, moving to the championship, Morbidelli still sits pretty at the top with 123 points, which puts him 7 points ahead of Tom Lüdi on 116, and then 20 points off the lead is Alex Marquez. So definitely between those three for the title, nice and close as well. Then in fourth is Oliveira, ahead of Pessini, ahead of Pecco Bagnaia as the leading rookie, who's ahead of Nakagami, Agata, Luca Marini, and then Xavi Vieja completes the top 10 as well. Bit disappointing to see Lorenzo Baldassare outside the top 10 in the championship, but you know, it's always a hard class for a rookie. Moto2, hopefully we'll have some more good races like we had in Mugello. But, you know, Catalunya unfortunately proved that, hey, Moto2 can be a little boring sometimes.
Yeah, and, you know, some of that might be down to the track changes, but you got to remember, you know, Moto2 has been boring for about the last 2-3 years, I would say, ever since pretty much everyone switched to one chassis. But it's, you know, it's also gotten down to, you know, the knife has been sharpened, right? It was very dull in the beginning, and now it's sharp. So everyone's the top edge, and the talent is going to come to the top. So you're always going to see the top guys going through, which is why, you know, I know a lot of people don't think Moto2 is important. I do. You know, go look at Johann Zarco versus Jack Miller if you want to see what a, what a, you know, a gap is versus experience. Now, I know there's lots of other factors, different bikes, different age, and all that good stuff. But, you know, the cream always rises to the top, and the more and the more bikes that are different that you can ride fast, the better you are. And so if you know two bikes in your whole racing career, three or four, you're not going to be as good as a guy that's ridden six to the top. So it is an important series, but, you know, we'll just move it on to MotoGP at this point.
Yep, move it on to MotoGP, like all these riders want to do. So Mugello, what a race we had in Mugello. Oh my word, is 2017 the best season ever? I think so. Great fight out the front with Dovi, Vinales, Petrucci up there. Rossi was up there for a bit. Just absolutely thrilling stuff out the front. You know, there's some quiet moments during the race, but for me, I didn't get to watch the race live because I had to drive back to Bologna because I'm an idiot and booked my flights at terrible times. But, you know, even knowing the results, watching it back is a really great race to watch. You know, as I said, it really, you know, kept you on the edge till the end. But dream come true for Andrea Dovizioso as he took an absolutely unbelievable victory in Mugello. He'd been up all night shitting himself before with food poisoning, but he bounced back in the best way possible. And a really spirited ride after an absolutely massive moment at the start where he almost lost it. Yeah, I mean, I honestly didn't think Dovi had it in him.
I don't know how he saved from that crash. He was going on, for those of you who didn't get to see it or don't remember, in Mugello, their straightaway isn't exactly a straightaway. It has a crescent and it makes it to left going into the first turn, which is taking it about, I think, 320 kilometers, right, Harry? Which is, what, 217 on a Ducati, I think?
Yeah, something like that.
He basically got a real bad speed wobble coming over that because they tend to lift the front tires, and as they come back down, they're also applying the brakes. And he shook and came off, and actually, I think, even still backed it in to turn one to gain a place, which was... I mean, when luck is on your side for the weekend, I mean, you just take full advantage, which Dovi did. But he didn't even think he stood a chance. During warm-up, he felt terrible. He felt like he had no strength. He felt like the bike wasn't there. And he just went out there and just, you know, got to the front, laid out some consistent laps, and got into a rhythm. And, well, that was that. And considering that, you know, his teammate went out there and just ruined his tires like a Moto2 rookie.
But, I think it's important to remember that Lorenzo did make a very good start to the race and was actually leading, which I think shows that it's coming slowly, but Lorenzo is getting to grips with that Ducati, as we'll get to with the Catalan Grand Prix. You know, Lorenzo made a very good point that he spent his entire life riding motorcycles one way. You know, the 250 style transferred very well through to the Yamaha. So, you know, for the past over a decade, he's only been riding motorcycles in one way. You know, he's barely ever touched a rear brake in his life, and now he's having to use it at every corner. So, you know, Lorenzo is very, very good. But even for the best of the best, it does take time to adapt. And I think we're starting to see that the adaption is coming for Lorenzo, and that it's not all fucking doom and gloom for him.
Oh, yeah, no, people who were going to say, you know, after three races, he's going to quit and all this. I mean, those are people who just wanted some clicks on their website because there's no way this guy's going to quit. I mean, he's a super talented guy. Like you say, he's been riding one bike for the last 9 years, and he's already catching up to ride something completely different at the head of GP, mind you. It's just, you know, hasn't all come together yet, but it's still impressive. So his teammate, though, goes out there and leads the race, and brings it, you know, Rossi got up there and was on the podium for a while because after Maverick Vinales got by, he thought Maverick could run down Dovizioso, and he didn't quite have enough, and then Maverick decided the championship is still on point to stay with it. Rossi started to fade back, and then Rossi's motocross injury, I think, came back to give him at the end, which is where I'm going to take a time to have a rant. And I know me and Lynn had a bit of conversation on Twitter about this, but when it comes to motocross, by now, these riders should know, stay off the fucking motocross bike. Jumping 30 feet in the air ain't got shit to do with MotoGP or road racing in general. Now, some people have made the argument it has to do with timing and risk assessment and all these things. That's fantastic. You can learn that. That's like saying, I learned how to swim. I go down to the pool, do laps, or I jump in shark-infested water. Now, one of those is more dangerous, but yet you still get the same amount of training, just a little different. You might swim a little faster with sharks, but you might also, you know, remove a leg or an arm. So even when they asked all the guys at the end where they had Danny Pedrosa and Dovizioso, and they asked them, what would you do with the motocross? Danny Pedrosa looked with wide eyes and said, I rode motocross as a kid, and then I got hurt when I was riding for the 125 or 250 championship. And goes, so I still have a dirt bike with no jumps. And that's the thing. These guys can't contain themselves. Much like a 17-year-old with a 600cc motorcycle on a freeway, it's not going to stay in second gear. You're going to go full out because that's just fun. And that's what they need to say when they're out there riding motocross. You're not training. You're having fun. I have no problem with you having fun. But don't sit around and fly off of a jump on the side where it's not groomed and bust yourself across the handlebar and call it training. You're dicking around. And in any other professional sport, your ass would have been fired.
Yeah, I think that's also the big thing is that, yeah, for me it was a bit strange. Now, Rossi had obviously had that big motocross accident in 2010 when he busted up his shoulder pretty bad. So it was very surprising for me to hear that he had been back out on a motocross bike. You know, in all forms of sports, and even MotoGP, riders will have in their contract that they can't do X, Y, and Z, you know, be it for training or be it outside of training. And I would have thought that Yamaha would have written that into his contract, but then again, it's Valentino Rossi, so he can do what he likes, because what are Yamaha going to do? Not sign him?
Right, exactly. I mean, he drives more marketing for them than if he's hurt. I mean, you just saw what happened at Mugello a few years ago when he stepped away, half that circuit left with him. So, but it's just a risk, right? And these guys do have to train. They're going to do what they're going to do, and they're going to get hurt one way or another. It doesn't matter what you're doing, but I just feel that. That's how I feel about that, while I left that out there. But anyway, back to the race. Even, you know, Iannone, who had a great start, but he's somebody else I wanted to talk about for a second, because what has happened? In testing, he was up there, top five, lighted the rear tires. I've never seen someone go backwards from testing, but it seems like
I think we should talk about
lost.
Iannone a bit more after the Catalan Grand Prix.
This is true.
Because I think that really highlights, because, you know, Iannone was in the top 10 in Mugello, which right now is a pretty good result for Iannone.
So, you know, also in Crutchlow and Pedrosa. Oh, Pedrosa, that's your fault, Harry. You talked him up. You were saying he could win the championship, see? And then he thought the same thing on the last lap. I can win the championship. I just got to pass Cal. Oh, no.
Yeah, Cal was not so complimentary on Danny. Everybody seemed to really kick off that Cal said he was happy that Danny lost his position in the championship, which I don't know why everybody was so upset by that. Like, what was Cal meant to do? Cal got taken out of a race. Like, was he meant to be happy for Danny?
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Cal is definitely one to say what he wants to say, but I think everything he said was correct. It was a dumb move. It was bad. It was an aggressive move that failed, but it was one of those unnecessary moves, right? You're not going to win the race, but you're also going to run the risk of crashing someone out for fourth place or whatever it was, fifth. But, you know, Danny's been known to make a few risky moves in the day, so I just won't step on that pile. But all in all, like I said, it was a fantastic race, and it was glad to see Dovizioso win that race. And then, you know, he kind of carried that momentum over, didn't he?
Yeah, he certainly did. You know, Dovi did the double Dovi, double Ducati delight, as Andrea Dovizioso went out and won the Catalan Grand Prix as well. You know, had a pretty quiet start to the weekend, but come race day, he did it. But again, it was his teammate Jorge Lorenzo who led the start of the race. Lorenzo had a big drop mid-race, but then came really strong at the end, which I think, again, is indicative that Lorenzo is really making steps forward on that Ducati, and a big breakthrough is you know, just around the corner. You know, Aston's a bit of a bogey track for Lorenzo, and then Sachsenring isn't really the best Ducati track, so we might see him and Dovi be a bit quiet for these next two races, but there's definitely hope for
because so now he's burned the tire. Now he's figured out the beginning of the race, and he's figured out the end, so they're down to the middle, and now once that gets figured out, well, there you go.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, two of the three pieces are in place. Clearly, Dovi has all three of them figured out. the first time in Dovi's entire career, 125s, 250, that he's ever taken back-to-back victories. He was followed home by Mark Marquez and Danny Pedrosa. It was pretty close for the first half of the race. Then it started to stretch out a bit. Lorenzo was up there. Zarco was really strong as well. It was a disastrous weekend for Yamaha. They just had no rear grip. Zarco was the leading Yamaha. Rossi was 8th. Vinales was 10th as they really struggled. And, you know, Yamaha really looking at what frame they're using now. Obviously, both the Tech 3 bikes are on last year's frame, while Rossi and Vinales are on this year's new frame. So, you know, a lot of talk about what they'll do.
And Zarco was only top because he passed Jonas Folger. Jonas Folger actually looked like the only Yamaha that knew what he was doing that weekend, because he ran up in the top five for the longest time, and he burned his tires up at the end and allowed his teammate by it. But he actually had a decent race up until about the last third of it.
Yeah, no, really, really good for Folger again. And, you know, showing why he, you know, should have an extension to his contract. Mentioned it before, mentioned again. Folger really, you know, really shutting me up with my preseason predictions about him, and, you know, hold my hands up. But now,
come on, I think that was everybody.
Yeah, now I think it's time that we talk about Andrea Iannone.
Yes.
So I think it's fair to say that he's been a bit shit this year.
For sure.
And Suzuki are starting to reach their breaking point, because Iannone, his race started okay, you know, 3 quick laps at the start, then he dropped right back.
Yes.
And then his replacement teammate, who's about 80 years old, Sylvain Gintoli, passed Andrea Iannone. And then Iannone goes about 2 seconds a lap faster.
Right.
Which, you know, clearly wasn't a technical problem. He was just being a bit shit. Suzuki now actually getting quite pissed off at Andrea Iannone, because it's clear he's not really, you know, his head isn't really in this, his heart isn't really in this. And frankly, he should be ashamed that Sylvain Gintoli, no offense to Sylvain Gintoli, but he's not a full-time MotoGP rider. As we said, he's much older than Iannone. Iannone should be ashamed that Gintoli finished within 5 seconds of him in the race.
Yeah, no, and like you said, nothing to do with Gintoli. Anybody that fills in on that bike, test rider, or anyone that doesn't have, he's been on this bike, he's tested it. Anyone not named Alex Rins, and even Alex Rins should worry you if he was catching you the whole time, you know. But this is not a good look for Iannone. He already had, you know, basically got the boot by Ducati because of his, you know, I would say mental approach to racing. Obviously, he didn't get booted because of his talents. He was quite fast. He just made mistakes at the wrong time, and he made mistakes because he thought the wrong thing. However, this has not been, you know, when you're basically quitting on a season like he seems to be showing, and his frustrations, and whenever they ask him what's going on with the bike, he's just saying, we're not there, or I can't get any feeling. It seems like he's given up the team, and if once the team gives up on, you know, dealing with him, you know, Iannone needs to be careful. This is a factory effort, and when you look bad on a factory effort and quit, you're not going to get another chance, likely, and you're not obviously going back to Ducati. They're set. Honda is set.
There was a rumor going around in Catalonia that Iannone was in talks to go back to Primark.
Well, I mean, that's not a bad place to go. I mean, you know, there's been some tough times over there, here and there, but you don't, still though, you don't give up because it leaves a bad taste in everybody's mouth because they're not going to want to work with you. And then when you do something like that, you need to come out and be strong. So it's more pressure applied to you, which means you're going to push harder, which means you might crash. And,
yeah, but
you know,
at least if you're crashing, you have an excuse to finish 43 seconds behind the winner on a bike that last year won races and was regularly fighting for the top 5 with 2 riders.
Yeah, that's it, right? Because Maverick was up there dealing with this, and you know, here's Suzuki. Do you think they miss Alesh yet?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that in hindsight. Well, actually, Suzuki misses everybody. They miss Zarco yet? So yeah, Suzuki definitely is having a after having a great season of pulling up the correct riders at the correct time, they have taken a huge step back in their rider lineup. And I, like I said, because of what they had done previously and what those riders are now currently doing in the championship, you would have to believe that Suzuki, the bike is still capable and the team is still capable, but they don't have the current rider lineup with all excuses to Alex Rins. He's been sidelined for majority of the season. But with Iannone, that something is amiss, and that miss is Andrea Iannone.
Yeah, no, for sure. As we said, Iannone already linked to Pramac. Also, it seems in discussions with Aprilia, Aprilia not too happy with Sam Lowes. That was a bit of drama during the weekend as well. You know, Aprilia saying they're not happy with Lowes, Lowes saying that the team don't treat me with any respect. In qualifying, the team didn't have Lowes' second bike ready, so we didn't get to do any laps, basically. Lowes is still on a different, you know, model, basically, to a leash. And yeah, it looks like that situation in the Aprilia team could get a bit messy. And you know, Lowes hasn't even really been crashing that much, to be honest. You know, I know he has a bit of a reputation, but it's not like he's chucking it down the road. Any more than anybody else.
Any more than maybe his teammate. He has tossed it down the road quite a bit, though.
The thing with Alish is always engine problems. I think Alish is already through, I think, halfway through his engine allocation, and Aprilia get more engines than everybody else because they're, you know, still have those concessions in place. So, yeah, it seems like it's, you know, there was flashes for Aprilia at the start of the season, but just reliability really getting them down.
Where I think where Lowe's might be struggling is the crashing may not be as bad, but when you're crashing from second to last, that's where it hurts. Whereas Alish or anybody else, you know, previously on the bike was crashing out of 10th, out of 12th. When you're crashing out of 21st place, that's where it might look bad. And like we just discussed, the team giving up on you, you don't want that. And I don't think, like you said, I think it's been a bit of a bummer because Alex Lowe's is in a learning season. And obviously the guy has loads of talent. We've seen that on display from his, you know, British Supersport to his World Supersport career. You don't go out and take down Kenny Safoglu without having some bit of talent.
And then
jump over to Moto 2. That's not an easy jump to make from World Super to Moto 2. He couldn't do that. So he came over there and, you know, did well, was a consistent, you know, winner, you know, front runner and winner. So, but, you know, not the best team for him to go to really. This is a team that needs to develop, you know, they don't need to develop riders. They need to develop a bike. So this team needs someone like an Andrea Iannone, which might happen, or someone with experience. And he needs to go to a team that, you know, unfortunately it's limited, right? He needs to go to an experienced team so he can learn about, you know, riding a motorcycle, not dialing in a motorcycle maybe per se at a MotoGP level. But at this point, you know, when you jump in and your rookie campaign goes sour and you get the boot, it's cutthroat. You got guys coming up, they're going to take seats, and I mean, he'll find his way. He's not going to be out of a ride somewhere next season, but it's definitely not looking good. And the thing is, though, you know, a lot of it, like you said, you know, is between the ears. And if he's not happy with the team's not happy with him, it's not going to go anywhere. So hopefully he can get it all, you know, put together without hurting himself this year.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, you know, there were two great races, Barcelona, especially in the second half, maybe a little quieter than Mugello. But, you know, a great race and really important for the championship. Still Maverick Vinales leading with 111 points. But just 7 points behind him is Andrea Dovizioso. Marc Marquez on 88 points. So, you know, Marquez really needs to start winning and, you know, start hoping that Vinales and Dovi have some mistakes. And if Dovi is one thing, it's consistent.
Yes.
So who knows? You know, we're now 7 races into an 18 race championship. So it's not like, oh, you know, it's the first couple of rounds, you know, oh, it's crazy results. It's seriously looking like Andrea Dovizioso could be a championship contender.
And it doesn't look like he is.
Yeah.
He's only a few points out. And, you know, if you look at the rest of the guys that are up there, they've all been crashing their brains out this year. And he really hasn't. You know, outside of, you know, you know, basically Andrea, you know, next year he's going to wish they're not going to go to Argentina anymore. But outside of Argentina, you know, if that hadn't happened, you know, wherever he finished, he's probably leading the championship at this point. He's on the hot streak. So, you know, the obviously that bike is good. He's good and he's in a good place. So it'll be good to see what he could do. And speaking of him, you know, that's the first Ducati back-to-back win since 2010 with Casey Stoner. So he was checking all the boxes with that win in Catalonia.
I'm sure that, you know, I saw his manager out on track and his manager was almost as happy as Dovi, probably because his manager figured out just exactly how big the win bonus from two races was going to be.
Right. There might be something extra in the contract for sure. Doing the double there.
For sure. So shaping up to be another, you know, it is a great MotoGP season. We can't say it's shaping up to be. It is a great MotoGP season. So tight at the top. hugely unpredictable again. You know, we had Petrucci on the podium in Mugello. And then, you know, we've had Zarco up there. Folger's coming good as well. So, you know, really excited for the TT, the Assen round this upcoming weekend. And then hopefully the Saxon Ring is exciting. I'm not really a big Saxon Ring fan, but such is life.
Yep. So quickly, let's just do this for fun because we haven't done this in a while. Predictions for Assen, real quick. Your top three for the race. You're on the spot. Let's go.
Vinales, Rossi, Dovi.
All right. I'm going to put Vinales, Marquez, and then Rossi.
Nice.
All right. We'll see how accurate we are when we come back, if we even remember what we said.
Exactly. So now now we'll jump over to World Superbikes. So we'll start with Donington. We'll probably just go over World Superbikes unless you have really anything pressing to say about World Supersport.
Nope. I'm good.
Okay, wonderful. So in Donington Park, Tom Sykes did as Tom Sykes did and won from pole position by 16 and a half seconds. Meanwhile, Jonathan Rea had a rear tire issue, which caused him to have his first DNF of the year. Very scary issue for Jonathan Rea. He had about a 10-centimeter tear on the side of his Pirelli tire. So pretty hairy for him, but that did promote Leon Haslam, the wild card, up to second. And then Lowe's, after being pushed wide at the first corner and, you know, basically being last in the race, came through to return to the podium for the first time in 2 years and become the first non-Kawasaki / non-Ducati on the podium all year.
Yeah, which was, you know, it was a great issue. And that, like you said, that Johnny Ray that was scary, that happened in Craner Curves, which is just about one of the few places you don't want something like that to happen. And it was coming. He lost so much time there when he was out there in the front and then dropped back. But, yeah, I'm glad he was able to, you know, relatively walk away from that.
Yeah, no, yeah, huge crash for him. And, you know, his Alpenstars, Leathers, and Arai helmet really doing their job there.
Yeah, they got a lot of work over the last 2 weeks. But with Alex Lowe's finishing up there, not only was it good to see Alex getting some redemption, but Yamaha finally seems that in running into the following race weekend as well, it seems like Yamaha is now starting to hit their groove, figuring that bike out with the Crescent team.
Yeah. Big improvements being made for both Lowe's and Vandermark. They're also off to do the Suzuka 8-hour. So, you know, they'll be getting a lot of bike time. Then in race two at Donington Park, Tom Sykes couldn't quite do the repeat. Obviously, he had to start back in ninth place. So Jonathan Rea ended Tom Sykes's run of 9 consecutive wins in Donington Park. We should also mention in race one of Donington Park that Chaz Davies once again sort of cracked under the pressure. It seemed a bit, made a mistake while leading and crashed out of the race.
But a fronting crash again too.
Yeah, but he was able to redeem himself in race two when he got third ahead of Vandermark, who was ahead of Lowe's. So again, both those Yamahas inside the top five. Leon Camus was up there in sixth. You know, once again, Leon Camus, an absolute miracle worker on the MV Augusta. Marco Melandri, unfortunately, had a chain problem, so he failed to finish. In fact, there are only 14 finishers in the second race. A real war of attrition. Jordi Torres had a big crash. Leon Haslam got taken out in the first, I think it was on the first lap.
So, yeah, Mercado got into him.
Yeah. So all over the shot for a lot of those riders. Jake Dixon, the BSB wildcard, running full BSB electronics, so no traction control or anything like that. He got a top 10, so that shows, you know, how attritional it was and also how talented Jake is. Obviously, Jake is fresh off his first double victory in the BSB championship, so bright future for him. But yeah, no real surprises in Donington Park, apart from that race one where we saw Lowe's have that incredible ride. But surprises were the order of the day in Misano. Race one, the last, if you haven't watched World Superbikes race one, I would highly recommend you go at least watch the last 5 laps, because they were probably the best 5 laps of World Superbikes we've had in 3+ years. It was
easily
Melandri, Davies, Jonathan Rea, all with the red mist down, going absolutely at it. But it was Michael Vandermark, who was the star of the first half of the show. He broke away and had a really comfortable lead until there was another rear tire failure for him, and he fell out of a pretty comfortable lead. So huge disappointment for him, and obviously a bit worrying for Pirelli. But yeah, those last 5 laps, Melandri Ray and Davies all just going at it, absolutely hammer and nails there between them. Melandri, he fell early in the lap, and it was, you know, it was that classic Chaz Davies versus Jonathan Ray battle right to the end. Turn 14, Chaz Davies comes in, just grabs a bit too much front brake and goes down, and unfortunately Jonathan Ray had nowhere to go, so had to literally go over the top of Chaz Davies. Davies immediately got to his feet and tried to pick up the bike, the adrenaline holding off the pain just long enough before he realized, oh no, this is quite bad, and collapsed. Their crash allowed Tom Sykes to sneak through and take victory ahead of Alex Lowes, who equaled his career best finish with second. And then Jonathan Ray was able to remount and finish third, just ahead of Jordi Torres. But huge drama, and then a great gesture from Jonathan Ray to, on the cool down lap, he stopped at the Marshall post and checked on Chaz Davies. And, you know, in the post race interviews, Jonathan was, you know, visually really shaken up by the incident. You know, they had their war of words in Assen, but, you know, much like with the Max Biaggi thing, you know, all of these guys have huge respect for each other when they are out on track. And, you know, obviously Jonathan Ray didn't mean to run over Chaz Davies and was really shaken up and worried by it.
Yeah, and, you know, I might have to rescind what I was saying earlier on my rant that motocross is no place in road racing, because he certainly caught some air off that jump, and it might have been his days in bailing off of a motocross bike that allowed him to actually be able to escape that, rather, you know, he was able to escape that without any harm and finish without his right foot peg. But like you said, it was a scary crash. Chaz, unfortunately, because of that crash, wasn't going to be able to start the second race.
Yeah,
but
cracked L3 vertebra, so one of the vertebrae towards the bottom of his back. But, you know, again,
he's
not
lucky with that.
Yeah, really lucky. And again, shout out to Alpenstar Leathers and X-Lite Helmets for Chaz Davies, because, you know, they both did their job and beyond there.
Yeah, and you know, going back to Michael Vandermark with the rear tire failure, like you said, a bit of a concern, where actually Pirelli is bringing a harder tire to Laguna for the next round to hopefully avoid any more problems like that. I'm not sure if it's the heat or if it's, you know, what's been causing the problems. It could just be coincidence that two tires have, you know, had problems in the last two races, but when it happens to your front runners, it gets a little more attention than they want. So they're going to take immediate action to make sure that cannot happen again.
Yep. And then unfortunately in race two, we actually had a tire issue for Jordi Torres after he was a surprise leader of the race, much like Michael Vandermark for the first half of the race. Great to see Torres and the BMW up there again. A tire issue unfortunately forced him to retire. But race two was pretty good, not quite as good as race one. Marco Melandri returned to winning ways in World Superbikes, hasn't won a race since 2014, and Marco Melandri became the first Italian rider on a Ducati to win in Italy since 2004, when Keeley won his last race, funnily enough, in Misano as well. And not only that, but Marco Melandri was able to take Italy's 100th World Superbike win. So a pretty special day for Melandri, and good to see that, you know, he does still have that winning speed inside him.
Yeah, if you think, you know, Dovizioso being the Italian rider on an Italian bike and, you know, in Italy, well, Marco beat him by one. He was an Italian rider on an Italian bike in Italy with Italian tires. So there you go. Definitely it's been a good month for the Italian crowd and Ducati. One thing, like you said, mentioned Torres, since we started this reshuffling, you really don't tend to see many people take advantage of it. Michael Vandermark did a pretty good job a couple races ago. But for the most part, you see Johnny Ray making amazing passes and Tom Sykes getting balled up a little bit and Chaz Davies, you know, ducking in under everybody to get back to the front. But Torres has taken the best advantage, so much so that he got robbed of a podium. Now, this was, you know, this actually played advantage. He's able to start at the front. So honestly, Torres needs to be on a better bike. And if I was one of the Yamaha boys or somebody that's kind of been finishing that oh so close but not had a great season, I'd be very concerned with him in the paddock, because that guy has loads of talent, but that BMW is much like the Aprilia. Without the factory effort, it's not quite there. And that's why people like Eugene Laverty and furthermore Salvatore have been struggling so much on the Aprilia this year, because that bike is obviously a fine-tuned machine. And if you can't get 100% out of it, you can't ride 100% on that bike. You can ride it maybe 90%, and it certainly looks like that's what Eugene's doing. He's a former race winner on that same machine, and when it comes to the end of the races, he's barely sniffing the top five. But the only reason it looks like that is because several have dropped out in front of him. So that bike, like I said, much like the BMW that Jordi Torres is on, you know, not the best machine to be on at World Superbike currently, but you know, I think Torres can jump on a better machine. He will definitely be bringing the fight to those guys because he was overriding the the wheels off that thing, literally.
Yeah, no, huge respect to Jordi Torres, and as you say, just such a bitter disappointment that that, you know, no fault of his own, his race was unfortunately ended early. But yeah, Melandri ahead of the Kawasaki duo is now definitely between just Jonathan Rea and Tom Sykes for the championship. And even so, Jonathan Rea, who actually received an MBE before the weekend in the Queen's Birthday Honour List, so pretty prestigious thing for any British person, although he's technically Irish, but, you know, we won't get into politics now.
It's the United Kingdom, Harry, come on.
Yeah, sorry,
it's United Kingdom. It's all United.
So yeah, you know, it's Jonathan Rea's championship to lose once again. You know, he has a healthy 50-point lead over his teammate. And it's going to be who can finish third in the championship between Melandri, Davies, and Lowe's. And that's pretty much all there is to play for. But hopefully we'll still have some exciting racing. Obviously, World Superbikes are next off to Laguna Seca, which is an absolutely incredible thing because I finally get to go to Laguna. You know, Laguna's definitely probably one of the last couple of circuits on my bucket list alongside, you know, the TT and Suzuka. And then I can die a happy man. So very excited for Laguna, and hopefully we'll be able to do a little motopod something there. As it's just the World Superbike class, it's a pretty, you know, light weekend in terms of work for me. So hopefully on Friday or maybe Saturday morning, we can do a little something, and then maybe of an evening as well. Definitely need any restaurant recommendations for Laguna Seca. So Harry@motopodcast.com, get in your restaurant recommendations to me. I'll eat anything, just whatever's the best in the area.
Yeah, and I thought you were going to say you're excited because you're getting to see me when
well,
you come
that,
out
that
here.
Too. But, that too.
You know, unfortunately, if you do a meetup on Saturday, I won't be there. Got a bit of other things I got to be. I will be out there Sunday, so roaming around the pits and talking to people. So I probably won't have anything on you'll be able to identify me with. But yeah, maybe we can do a meetup on Sunday. But those are usually hard because there's so much going on those days. But maybe in the morning or something. But yeah, it'll be good to have you out here to see, be able to join us. Hopefully the weather has calmed down. Dude, it's 100. It's been 105. Where I'm at right now, and I'm
Don't talk to me about weather. It's like 30 degrees in the UK. It's 30 degrees in the UK, and everybody's acting like the world is ending here. People are walking around fucking half naked, and it's only 30 degrees.
Yeah, no, it's been a bit blistering here. You know, I've actually cut back on the work this week because it's been so hot. But we're supposed to cool back down. And it's always usually a little different down there because you're next to the water, so it stays pretty cool unless you're, you know. But then again, it is in the valley, so you get this microclimate where it can get really, really hot because it all stays. The heat stays in within the mountains. But yeah, you're gonna have a great time. I'll have to put something together for you too because it's a blast out here.
I am very, very excited, and hopefully everybody else is excited for all the racing we have coming up. Of course, we have Assen, then the Saxon Ring, then Laguna Seca for World Superbikes. Then we have the Brno Austria double for MotoGP before the summer break starts. So there's a lot of racing to still enjoy, and you know, on a race-by-race basis, World Superbikes is still looking pretty good. Maybe for the overall championship, it's not quite as exciting as MotoGP. But it's a great year to be watching motorcycle racing of all forms.
Yes, you know, like I said, I haven't been able to catch BSB this year. I'll have to see if I can catch up with some of that because I've been hearing that's been good. Moto America is still good. You know, hopefully I can catch Scott for a few more of those this year. And, you know, like I said, not only has it been a great year, but it's been a lot to watch. So that's kind of been a hard thing to do is catch everything. Like you said, you know, there's so much online now that you can see. It's almost overwhelming. So. But it's all fantastic, so whatever you're catching is going to be good.
Yep, it certainly will. And I think that's more or less us done for a show. I think it's a pretty big one to come back on. Right now, it's looking at being like an hour and a half, so that's certainly a bit longer than we've had them for a good long while.
Yeah, right. I think at any if we did it in 5 minutes, people might have been happier than what we've been putting up for the last few weeks. But once again, thanks to everybody for sticking through. Like we said, you know, if you feel like you want to help out in some way, whether it's contributing and with, you know, calling in or not necessarily calling in, but wanting to talk about just maybe one race, you know, we could take that, you know, with anybody because it is a bit boring when you have to talk to yourself and you end up rambling on. And I mean, we ramble on with two people, let alone by yourself. You know, Harry's going to go on and talk 15 minutes about Lewis Hamilton's drink, and I'm going to sit here and bore you to death about how good my beer is and that you can't have it because it's limited edition. However, but I digress, as Harry says so much when he wants to end his rant. So we'll go ahead at this point. I'm going to say, like I say, if you want to reach us, you can reach us at Motopod at motopodcast.com. I'm on Instagram and Twitter as SkylarV28. Harry's on Instagram and Twitter. I think now HL Comms on both. Or are you still
Yes,
HL Photo?
I think I'm still HL Photo on Instagram. I don't know, but yeah, just follow my Twitter and I'll post an Instagram link at some point probably.
Right, so you can get a hold of us in any of those ways. You can tell us we're absolute shit or that we're Greek gods, whichever you feel. I don't know. Harry usually has the best comebacks to any criticism, but yeah, we'll leave that for another time. But yeah, anyway, thanks for sticking with us. Thanks for tuning in, and I'll see you next time.
Bye, everyone.